The Skiffy and Fanny Show is listener-supported, which means basically you guys listen and we feel really good about ourselves. But if you'd also like to help us a little bit, you can go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for a 1-month free trial membership, get a free book, which is pretty cool, and the bonus is that it helps us a little bit. So go ahead and check that out at audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty and enjoy the episode.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, yes. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, a Shoot the Wisp segment. I'm here with my pals, Julia. Say hello.
Hello.
Paul.
Hello.
And David.
Hello.
And we're talking today about The World's End, the last of the Cornetto trilogy, if I've gotten the name right. The Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and other people whose names have now escaped my brain. So why don't we just start off with general reactions before we go into maybe more specifics. So, Julia, what did you think about the film more generally?
I really enjoyed it. It was fast-paced and clever and well-structured. And I had fun with it. I thought that Simon Pegg's character was the kind of person who is horrible, and we probably all know at least one guy like that. And it was very believable, and I loved to hate him.
Fair enough. Paul?
The more I think about this film, the more I realize how brilliant and interesting the film is. It like the other two, it subverts expectations of the film midway through, and I enjoyed it. Once that started kicking in, I really, really enjoyed the film.
Excellent. David?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. I don't know that I found it quite as brilliant as its predecessors, but I think I'll have to see it a few more times before I really come to grips with the film. But it's still the writing, the performances, the thought going into it, head and shoulders over just about everything else this summer.
Wow. And I think I feel about the same as all of you. Mostly just really loved it. And I agree with you, Paul, that as soon as it takes that kind of turn from just kind of being like a drunk comedy kind of thing, and it becomes a little deeper, which I will probably talk about later. I think that's also the moment when it immediately became far better than any other excuse for a science fiction or fantasy comedy this year, namely things like A Haunted House or Scary Movie 72 or whatever number we're on this year. If you've seen A Haunted House, by the way, I'm going to be blunt. It's fucking awful. It is one of the worst films. It's torture cinema level. Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. I haven't
Except
even finished
I
it yet.
I probably wouldn't watch it for torture cinema because it sounds like it's probably horror and gory, and I'm just going to step away.
No. It's supposed to be a comedy that makes fun of haunted house movies. It's by the same people who do like the scary movie stuff.
Okay, we just never need to watch those for torture cinema. Ever. There's no reason ever to do that to ourselves.
Because the sad thing is that almost every genre, if it's bad enough, turns into a comedy, except comedies.
Yeah. Because when it's not funny, it's not funny. But this film is actually, I think, pretty funny. So why don't we start with, let's be critical first, and then we'll end on happy notes. So let's start with you, Julia. Anything in particular that you didn't like about the way the film in general?
Okay, so You've called me because you know I have to bring up the Bechdel test. I don't have the call sign, the Bechdel crusher, for nothing. So it doesn't pass the Bechdel test. And the Bechdel test is not a be-all, end-all of whether a movie is okay with its treatment of women. But it's just an overall gauge of how many movies don't really have women in them. And this movie does not pass that. there isn't a point where women talk to each other and aren't talking about men. There's really only one woman in the movie who isn't actually not a robot, you know?
Fair enough.
So there's that. And there was also one bit particularly that really didn't work for me. And it was a point where there was one particular group of women who are all supposed to be very sexy. They have them dressed like schoolgirls. They have them act slutty, quote unquote. And I was really disappointed to see this whole like Austin Powers fembot type thing going on. And the idea that like this is a slut who's tempting Nick Frost away from his wife. And in the end, he like defeats her by eviscerating her and grabbing his wedding ring back after she asks him basically to have sex with her. And that was kind of, I was like, really, we have to go back to the whole, you know, if she's pretty, she's a slut and so forth, because that's sad. But other than that, like, I really don't have much to criticize about this movie. I pretty much enjoyed it all the way through. And that one scene was really the only thing that bothered me a lot about women.
Where he punches her in the stomach and takes the ring
she
out of
says,
her.
Yeah. The particular exchange is she says, I want to have you inside me. And he punches her in the stomach and pulls his wedding ring back because earlier she's eaten it. And he says, you know, okay. So it's sort of, you know, violence against women, even though she's a robot. And the idea that, you know, she's a slut, so you'd better kill her in order to save your marriage and this whole thing. But yeah, like other than that, I really think it is a movie that's centered on the men, and that's okay. Sometimes you can tell stories that are actually about men, and that's fine.
Okay, fair enough. Paul?
The opening stuff all the way till the genre shift, I didn't like it because I really didn't like the main character that much. I was just like, why am I watching this loser who's trying to recapture past glory? Until I started thinking about it after the movie. I mean, during the movie, it's like, I'm not really enjoying this. I'm not really feeling this. I'm not really identifying with this character too much. It got better once things started shifting. I began to see what Sean Pegg and company were doing. But until that point, it's like, did you go on a little too long with this before shifting genres, maybe? A beat before the change, I was like, I'm not really feeling this movie at the moment. I really don't like the main character. I'm not connecting. And then finally, things finally set for me. But until that point, I mean, he's a drug addict. He's a loser. He's trying to capture past glory. I really, really didn't like him as a character. It's like, what a yoinker.
Yeah, I don't think we're supposed to like him.
A yoinker?
I'm not sure what that is either, Paul.
It's a Paulism.
It's a Paulism. Alright, so apparently characters we don't like are yoinkers. Good. Or is that a specific thing? Does it have a definition?
It's basically characters of people who are just pieces of work.
That's not what you actually want to say.
But I'm trying to be clean.
Fair enough. I agree, but I think that's kind of the point. Like, we're supposed to be like, dude, what the hell is wrong with you for most of this? And we're supposed to, I think, side with his friends who are just kind of like, at least for the first couple pubs, we haven't actually described what the movie's about, but I think everybody knows at this point. But for the first couple pubs, they're just kind of like, we're putting up with him because, well, A, they think that his mother's died. He's lied about that, which I thought was hilarious. And then they're just kind of put up with him because there's something going on with him. They don't really understand what his problem is, but he's the only one of them that has not tried to move on. He's still so – and it's so hilarious the way in which they set up how trapped in the past he is, because there's that moment when he drives up in the car they call the Beast, and one of his friends is like – I think his friend was like Paul or something, was like, you know, this looks like the car I sold you in whatever year. And he's like, it is the car you sold me. It's the same car, except, of course, you know, I've changed the engine, the suspension and all these things. But otherwise, it's the same car. But I think that's part of the kind of narrative is – we're supposed to find him incredibly unlikable until we realize why he's acting the way he is. And then that changes our perspective. And I think it's, we're supposed to look retrospective, kind of look backwards and think about all of his behaviors beforehand. I don't think we're – we still probably aren't supposed to like him all that much, but at least we understand him.
Yeah. How about you, David?
Actually, what Julia said almost word for word was what was striking me about it that bothered me, and that scene in particular. And it was particularly disappointing to me because it was a misjudgment of tone that I don't think we get in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And though all three films are very much about the male characters, in Hot Fuzz, at least the female characters have more to do, and we even have that she's a minor character, but we get a sense of this other story going on in the background where she's like the anti-Sean who actually knows what she's doing and gets all of her friends out safely. And in Hot Fuzz, they're the almost exclusive folks. I mean, the female characters are even more to the side in Hot Fuzz, but they're the analysis of the, you know, barely concealed homoeroticism in the action buddy movie was very much the point, and I thought that worked very well. But whereas here, yeah, it felt the absence was more pronounced. It felt like a stumble to me, and the I want you in me yank moment was something that I just would have expected something much better of this team, based on the previous two films.
Julie, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, and I will say that I really did like that the one woman that they had who was a human character was pretty opinionated. She had a strong personality. She was good at taking care of herself. She couldn't always do it. Sometimes she needed help, but she was making smart decisions and actually had character. So that was cool. But I agree that there really weren't other, the only other woman that we see that is a human is the fitness instructor 26. That is actually what she is officially listed as in the credits, because one of the characters is dating her, and we see her for like all of 1 second at the very beginning where he's working out and she's helping him. And he's basically like, all throughout the movie, people are like, how are you doing? He's like, well, I'm dating someone, a fitness instructor, 26. And just reducing her to that age, I think it would have played better if maybe we saw her at some point telling one of her friends, like, I'm dating this older guy, he's rich, or something like that.
So that
she had a character. But it was the one thing that did kind of great.
Mm. And that thing with the instructor too, when we have this long in the building romance between our one female character and the one of the friends, I've forgotten his name, and it's supposed to be all poignant and so forth, but it's coupled with, you know, him telling her, yeah, I'm dating this fitness instructor, but I'll drop her in a second if you want to be with me, and we aren't given any reason to blink at that. Which renders her even more disposable.
Yeah, and they don't play up. I'll just add to that that they indicate that he had a thing for her when they were teenagers, but they don't play it up enough that his thing for her was more than just like the same thing that what's the main character's name has just totally escaped my brain.
Gary King.
Thank you. Sorry, I don't know why that just escaped. But Gary King's whole interest is sexually, right? He just wants to get some, right? We know that because that's what he does. But we don't ever understand his other friends why he is interested. So that interest never escapes that same kind of teenage lust interest. And so when he confesses his love to her, it's sort of like, this is out of the blue. How are we supposed to take that, like, seriously? That this is actually how you feel, because there's almost no indication, or at least not any attempt to really show that indication. So I don't know if anyone else agrees with that.
I think that I kind of got a sense that he actually was friends with her, and did care about her as a friend, so it wasn't as bad. It was pretty much just the whole, like, yeah, I'll drop my 26-year-old fitness instructor in a second for you because she's expendable, was more troubling to me than the idea that he would care about an old friend. And I thought his actions bore that out, because you saw him interacting with her in a way that was much different than Gary interacting with her throughout. But to go back to what I was saying about the human characters, we see, and we haven't explained what the movie is about, but basically these guys try to go on a quest to hit 12 pubs that are in one stretch of this town that they grew up in one night. And they did it when they were just graduating from high school, and they want to recapture that night. And it turns out that the town has been replaced by robots, basically. So we see occasionally throughout the town human characters who aren't robots, and all of those characters are men.
I just wanted to add to the description that everyone but King goes kind of reluctantly. He manipulates them all to go.
Yep.
And a detail we probably should mention is he wants to go. One of the first scenes we see with him as an adult is he's at an AA meeting, and he wants to go because they never actually completed the Golden Mile is what it's called. He never completed it, so that's why he wants to go. But for him, it's all about nostalgia. For the other characters, they get manipulated. Like, he tells them, my mother died, or this other guy's going to go, even though nobody thinks he's going to go, all those kinds of things. And so I think that since we didn't describe the film, that's really important to note that this is all kind of his manipulation to get them there.
Yeah, and I'll jump in and say that also, basically the dynamic of the group and why it was perfectly fine with me that it was a story that focused on the group of men was that it was the dynamic of them as teenagers revisited. And as teenagers, he had been their leader. He had been the coolest kid in school, and they had been kind of his band of sidekicks, and they all deferred to him. And the whole romantic subplot with the one woman and the other friend was that in high school he had been interested in her, and you get the sense that she might have even been interested back, but Gary blocked that from happening.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I'm not going to talk about what you guys have already talked about for the thing that I had problems with, because I think you guys really nailed it on the head, because the female characters aren't handled particularly well. I would almost hesitate to call most of them even characters. They're just kind of bodies, in a weird way, with maybe the exception of Sam, who we've already kind of mentioned has at least some characterization to her. I will say that despite this being a comedy film, I felt that the way it ends and basically like the cleanup moment after the final climax, I felt that that was a little too clean.
It's a clean apocalypse.
Yeah. It didn't quite work, I didn't think, particularly considering all of the setup until the climax when they face the super alien computer, and they're basically all like drunk as shit, and they're like, we're fucked up humans, and blah, 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 right? And the computer's like, I give up because you guys are too messed up. Like, we can't civilize you, so we quit. And then that leads the world into an apocalypse because all the technology like goes haywire. But I felt like even Gary King, it's Gary King, right?
Gary, yeah. King.
God, why? I can't remember his name. I don't know why. Even his sort of like at the end, I thought that was really cute that he becomes the leader again of the robotic version of his teenage friends. But at the same time, that seemed like there needed to be more of a conversation about that, but it wasn't there because they kind of like ended with the big explosion, and then it was like, Nick Frost's character sitting there going, and this is what happened afterwards over a fire to, I believe he's actually talking to a bunch of teenagers. But yeah, I just thought it was a little too cleanly finished out, that there was more to be told there that wasn't being told.
I think David wanted to talk.
Yeah, go David. Yeah.
Well, I see what you mean. It's funny, there was something about the ending that didn't quite work for me. That his big leap towards the camera, there was something there that just didn't quite nail it for me, and maybe you've described it. It is very summarized, very wrapped up, very told rather than shown. Though at the same time, I did love the fact that that was what the ending is, right? That the film completely eliminates the idea of human exceptionalism. All the films where we're somehow special and we tell the aliens off, and so yeah, we do that here, and guess what? That destroys the world effectively. All the nice things we had were put there by the aliens and the robots. So the thing that didn't, even though the execution wasn't absolutely perfect, I did very much like what it was doing.
But I think you could have done that without the summarizing. You could have actually, like, one of the things that they could have done is the world's end could have been where they ended up at the end, instead of that being where the big bad monster is, basically, and have that be the end. And so they're all sitting in this, like, messed up bar after the explosion, and they finish the mile by drinking what's left. And that's kind of our ending. We get a little bit of his voiceover telling us, like, that the world got effed up, and that's kind of the end. But we didn't really get that kind of satisfaction of the characters. We got this sort of everybody gets everything they really want kind of thing. And I don't know. It just didn't quite work for me. Julie, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that they really wanted to take a stab at all of the different post-apocalyptic films where, for some reason, the Earth has become this wasteland. And I thought it was really funny because given the story that they gave us and what happened with the aliens, there was really no reason for the landscape to look like it did. I mean, maybe in that town, which was obviously razed, but it didn't look like the entire Earth caught fire. So there was no reason for there to be, like, every building reduced to rubble. I mean, the power went out, but it wasn't like everything exploded. But I thought it was kind of they wanted to take that particular thing at the very end. And I think a lot of movies that have that actually do often have that voiceover narration or the person who's telling the story of, you know, this is how our culture came to be. Yep. So I think they were trying to do that. I also think that it was kind of great to see Simon Pegg's character. Basically, he got what he wanted. He got the world to be the kind of world in which he could be the king, and he could have his band of loyal followers and have everything as nice as anybody else in that world and still stay himself. It's a terrible world for everybody else, but he's happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, except for Sam and Patty Considine's character, Steven, they kind of get what they want. Well,
I would think that they would probably have preferred to live in Earth the way it was before.
But they have a cute little shack, and they probably have like 8 billion children.
Wouldn't they rather have a house?
Maybe a shack's all they need, Julia. No? No, but maybe they do. I don't know, man.
Paul has his hand up.
Go, Paul.
I do. I want to switch slightly. Julia actually anticipated a little bit, talking about he is the king. If you think about it, all the major characters have names derived from King Arthur or medieval times. We have Gary King. We have Andy Knightley. We have Oliver Chamberlain. We have Peter Page. We have Stephen Prince. And we have Samantha White. Samantha White, if you think about it, I looked this up to make sure. White is actually what Guinevere means. So you have King Arthur, his round table, and Guinevere. And Guinevere winds up with Lancelot, basically. Stephen Prince. Instead of with Arthur.
So it's actually an Arthurian legend being retold as what do you call that narrative? They're grown up, but they can't let go of the past narrative? Whatever you call that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and they mention King Arthur at a couple points. They mention medieval legends. And what does Gary have in his hand at the end of the movie?
A sword.
Exactly.
They're also on a quest for the Holy Grail.
But it's water.
No, the Holy Grail is full of the last pint of beer at the world's end.
Exactly.
Oh, that. You know,
exactly,
oh,
right,
it.
Julia. This movie is rife with symbolism like that. I mean, I did a little more research, and apparently there's stuff that goes beyond the characters how the movie ties in and where things happen and why they happen. For example, that problematic scene with the three femme fatales. You remember which bar that takes place in?
The Mermaid.
The Mermaid.
Exactly. It's at the hole of the wall that the car gets driven through the wall. They all meet up at the Good Companions. I actually should send this link because I found this so you guys can read it too.
That's awesome. But why don't we get David to jump in because he had his hand up. So what do you got to say, David?
Oh, I'm really glad that you pointed that out, Paul. I'd missed that. And that the thing with the names, I mean, that's exactly one of the things that I loved about Hot Fuzz, where all the names were significant. And what you were just describing there, that's exactly the kind of layering that I loved, that I find so much with Hot Fuzz. So every time I see that film, there's more that I missed from the first time around. And you'd go deeper and deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole with all the interconnections and references and gags and the difference in the repetition, which build and build and build. And what you were just describing there, that was what I was hoping to see in this film too, and I had missed that. I was feeling a bit of disappointment, and now I can't wait to see it again, because there clearly it's stuff that is there and I just happened to miss it. So I am very excited by what you just said there.
Yeah, Julia?
Yeah, all the pubs have very very clearly symbolic names. And on top of that, at the very beginning of the movie, they lay out exactly what will happen in the movie. They tell you at which point in the night different people stopped being on the quest. They tell you, he says, you know, at the Beehive, everything went mental. So that set the timer off in my head. And I'm wondering, like, okay, when are they going to get to the Beehive? And when they start to walk in there, I'm going, what is going to happen in this bar? Because something crazy is going to happen.
That's true. Yeah. And it does. And in fact, there's this really funny moment. One of the characters becomes a robot. And the way they kind of, if I recall correctly, the way they know is because the real that I forget which character it is, but the real him wouldn't have made it this far like he did, you know, because lived last time. And that's how they kind of knew he's not human. David?
And what you've both just described, that's the other thing I think that ties the trilogy together. All three films have that structure where the first half of the film sets up there's a series of events which are then replicated exactly in the second half of the film, but in an exaggerated, twisted sci-fi, horror, action, or mixture of all of those three.
This film's brilliant.
It's not a perfect film. As Julie pointed out, there's a big gaping hole with where it comes to treatment of female characters. But yeah, this movie has layers, kind of like an onion. Or like an ogre.
Or like Shrek.
Or like exactly. Shrek. well, we're kind of already getting into it, but let's start talking about the things that we actually like, because I think this is probably one of those films where the things we liked the most about the film were, we have quite a lot to say about that. I want to make sure we can actually talk about it so that it doesn't become the we're going to rip on movies kind of thing. So why don't we start with you, Julia? You probably already mentioned some of the stuff that you liked, but give us some, like, a specific thing you'd really like to talk about.
Okay, the soundtrack. This had a fantastic soundtrack, and I love the fact that they really tried to take music that would have been music that these guys listened to when they were younger. So you start out, and it also resonated with what was going on. The soundtrack wasn't full of a lot of score music. It was mostly full of actual songs. But when they start walking down the street and they're going to go on their first quest, they're playing So Young by Suede, which is a British pop band. And it's a song about how when you're young, you do stupid, crazy things because you're young. And you look at them and you're like, these guys are like 40 and they are being very stupid, but they look even worse than they would have. And they, you know, like, you have the sense that when they were 18, this was like the coolest thing ever. And I love the dissonance. They did things like that all throughout, not just with the soundtrack, where basically the first half of the movie worked really well for me because I thought it straddled the line really carefully between horrible, embarrassing, like you just look at these characters and you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry you're in this situation. Or Gary King, how are you being so awful? We're all embarrassed for you. And then also like making it actually funny so that I'd get embarrassed. I'd get really uncomfortable, but then they would break that with enough laughter that I could really feel the uncomfortableness and be okay with it.
And I also really like, I agree with you that when it shows them walking on the street and that song's playing, and you notice how much this isn't the thing that people their age would be doing by what they're wearing. Like, you know, King is wearing almost basically what he would have worn.
He's wearing the same outfit. He's wearing the exact same outfit, including like his Sisters of Mercy t-shirt. And he has a Sisters of Mercy tattoo on his stomach.
Yeah.
And there's also like the whole thing where they're in the car because they have to drive from the train station to the town. And he's like, yeah, this tape. And they're like, where did you find that? Like, I made you that tape in high school. He's like, it was in the cassette player because that's what he's been listening to for the last 25 years.
That. And when they stop the car, they get pulled over by the police officer, and he gives them his friend's, I think it's Pete as the character, he gives him his friend's information, and he's like, why would you give him my information? He's like, where do you think all the ticks have been coming from? I haven't changed the registration. And he's just been using his identity. Oh, he's such a douche. But yes, but like the things they're wearing, you know, like King with the stuff that Julia was just saying. But then the other characters, like Martin Freeman's character, is dressed basically as though he's at work. He has this little thing in his ear and everything. The other characters are kind of dressed as they would be in their normal lives. And it's like, it's obvious these characters are not supposed to be doing the Golden Mile. That's what, 12 pints of beer in however long they can manage to not puke, I guess. So, yeah, so anyway, did you have anything more to add about that, Julia?
No, I mean, I could go on, but I think I'd like to hear what the rest of you liked.
Okay, go for it, Paul.
I liked how the network slowly came to terms with the invasion, as it were, of Gary King and company. And once you start to realize what's happening and looking backwards, the police officer doesn't blink an eye at being given the false ID, and we see why later. Well, he's one of the blanks, and at first the people just stare at them. They don't react to them. When they go into the pub, the bartender, who's clearly a blank, doesn't really have anything to sell the beer, but he just says it's beer. But as things go on, they pay attention to them more. They start chasing them. The bartender starts trying to sell the virtues of the beer to them. The network learns from its mistakes and trying to come to terms with the characters. They have the problematic scene in The Mermaid where they're trying to seduce the characters. I love how the network as an intelligence tries to deal with this unexpected and unwanted intrusion of these characters, and we get to see that progress through the film. I mean, the network fails in the end because it doesn't never find a hook to put up onto Gary to make him come to their side, but I love how the network that slow intelligence are trying to deal with these guys and doing it in various ways, from slow surveillance to action violence.
That's actually really interesting because I hadn't really thought about that, because when they go to the first pub, and it's just sort of, it feels very commercial when they walk in and the guy doesn't remember Gary King, and because he says, you say, he's a blank. But then they go to the next pub and it looks exactly the same, which my first thought was, this is a commentary about the kinds of corporatization and commercialization of the pub atmosphere. And so buying out of pubs and just franchising the same thing, which is a problem. But then when you say that, like the idea that it's actually learning from the interactions it's had with real people, that actually makes a lot more sense. And so each pub they go to, it's actually trying to pick up different things from them that it needs in order to succeed, to make their experience appropriate. And of course, it in some cases it completely exaggerates and screws up that experience because it's a computer. It's not a human being.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really interesting. You're on top form today, Paul.
Thank you.
A+. Yeah. David, what about you?
Well, after two films with this, the great comedy and physical comedy of Simon Pegg as the responsible one and Nick Frost as the oaf, to suddenly have that completely reversed was a lot of fun. Nick Frost just has the most incredible ability in physical comedy. And there was a moment when now they're all getting thoroughly drunk and he explains that, well, the only plan we have is Gary's, which is to just keep getting drunk. And it seems to be the best option. So, well, fuck it. And then he walks out the door, breaking the glass as he does so. And there's something about the way he moved and the shattering of the glass and the timing of it that it just finished me. I went into a laughing fit that went on for 5 minutes. That one fraction of a second just demolished me. And so I very much like that. And just to pick up on what Paul was saying with the network, yeah, that learning, and finally the defeat isn't because the humans are more powerful or anything. The network just finally is fed up. Just you're just not worth it. Is this the first time since the day the Earth stood still that there's the possibility that the aliens actually we should be listening to them? They do have our best interest at heart, and we're the ones who are just screwing it up.
it's not a common narrative, that's for sure, and it's kind of hilarious. I see, Julia, you have your hand up, so why don't you jump in?
So. Two things. First of all, on the physical comedy visual gag thing, one thing that I thought was great and carried over from the previous movies was in Shaun of the Dead, you have the idea that if they pretend to be zombies, the zombies won't notice them. So they all try to walk like zombies. And in this movie, there's a point where they're like, we have to be people who are just, five guys having a good night out. And so they try to like walk down the street looking like the rest of the people in that town. And that was one of the points where I just lost it, because they look hilarious. They look like they're obviously uncomfortable, and they kind of have a little of the zombie shamble going on. But the other thing was that I had a big debate with Moss about whether or not the aliens had our best interests at heart. He is of the opinion that those aliens actually would have just killed all of people and replaced them with robots, and so they do not have our best interests at heart, and that there is no way in which the world actually has a happy ending. I was not clear on whether the aliens would have actually replaced all humans with robots and killed us, and I thought that it was possible that humans could have done better.
Yeah, I'm with you a little bit on that. I don't know. I it wasn't clear to me, and maybe David or Paul will maybe they remember something that'll make it clear. But it wasn't clear to me whether they intended to do the whole planet, because it seemed to me that they were just picking like entry points, but they were going to change the planet to make it basically to make it civilized.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought too. And Moss was like, well, of course that's what they say to you right now.
He's a naturally suspicious person.
That's why I want to raise my hand. That's what they say. They say they're there for societal social uplift, and that's why they're replacing certain people and introducing certain technology. But because they mentioned points about they're only going to do a small fraction of the population, and they've done this to other worlds, small fraction of the population, to bring them into the galactic community. But humans have been resistant to this, and they've had problems. So taking the aliens at their word, they're not going to convert the entire of humanity. That's not the point. The point is to make humanity better, and, well, better by their standards. And that's the last part of the movie, At the World's End, makes that clear, that humans are not going to be compartmentalized like that.
I love when it gives charts. It's like, look at all these other planets. Look how civil they are. And now Earth, and you're all the way at the bottom.
Yes.
I thought it was amusing. David, you want to jump in?
Well, it certainly is absolutely a narrative of colonization, right? One that we have heard before. Sure. Here. Yes, we're going to make things better for them, and so I think there is a kind of ambiguity. Yeah, do we take that at face value? And even if we do, are they to be trusted? I think it's interesting. We have at least a couple of still human characters, right? Who after the triumph and the network has given up, their response to these guys is, well, thanks a lot. ride because it was working out. It was nice what they had. And so unlike, say, The Day the Earth Stood Still, where and I'm erasing the Keanu Reeves film from memory here, where it is clear that the aliens do know better. And we don't. That isn't clear here, but I think even if there's the suggestion that maybe the aliens don't know better, don't have our best interests at heart, or else they're just, or else they think they do in a traditional colonial fashion, that the humans, we don't have our own best interests at heart because we're complete morons and we will screw it up spectacularly, which is what we do, right? When we get the, when Gary King gets his Captain Kirk moment, and his speech is just a quotation from the Wild Angels, or the Rebel Angels. And the result is, you know, finally the network just, you know, you guys, okay, leave you to your own devices. And what is that? Well, it's, you know, we get an apocalypse. Our individualism, the thing that makes us exceptional is just that we're exceptional idiots. and I did like that very much.
I love that when he's quoting, he's like, we just want to get drunk and have a good time. And the computer's like, I give up. Leave me alone. I'm going to go away. Yeah. That was good.
It kind of reminds me in some ways that if we encountered the late Ian Banks' culture, would the culture be able to deal with us?
Maybe not. All right. Well, I guess I'll go to my thing that I like. I liked almost everything everybody said so far, so I will just mention something different because I liked a lot of the comedy and all that stuff. But I think the moment that I was immediately sold on how much I loved the film was that moment when Gary King almost breaks down, and it's fairly late in the movie, but it's him and Nick Frost and like having an argument about, you know, why are you drinking so much? And he basically breaks down and he says, like, because everybody promised me that, you know, life after high school was going to be amazing, and that was as best as it got, and this is all I've got now. Because in a weird kind of sad sense, it's true. That's all he has is this one thing and, like, his friends and getting pissed drunk. And that's it. Because he's never moved on from that moment because he thinks that it never got any better. And I thought that was really, really interesting because it now changes the way you view everything that he does. He's still an asshole. He's still a jerk face. He's still a horrible human being in many respects. But he becomes much more complicated. And it was a kind of narrative that I feel is rather poignant right now when you have all of these, you know, 30-something people with all these degrees and they were promised this world and it doesn't exist now, right? This kind of the recession hits and there's none of that in existence anymore, but they were promised this world that never came into fruition. So it seemed in a lot of sense it was playing on those things. And it was that moment at which I thought, this is not just a comedy, it's now also a drama. It was sort of like Sideways, only better.
It looks like Julia wants to go. Go ahead, Julia.
I thought it was a drama from the get-go. I thought it was both a comedy and a drama. I thought from the very first, I mean, we see him, he's obviously in some sort of support meeting. It's not clear exactly what it's for. I think it's pretty clear later in the movie what's happened, and I don't know. Are we just spoiling everything? Because we pretty much have spoiled the ending.
There's a spoiler alert on the post.
Okay.
So
we see in the end that what's happened is he tried to kill himself because we see his bandaged wrists and he obviously tried to slit his wrists and he had a hospital ID tag. And that was why he didn't want to pull up his sleeves to prove that he was himself at some point when they're trying to get everybody to show birthmarks and things to prove that they're not robots.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want them to know that he had killed himself. And that's why doing this is so important. It's like he's cottoned on to the idea that if he had made it to the world's end, it would have been better. And he can still go and do that. That's the achievable goal. And it's important to him to recreate that. But like from the get-go, we see that he's in the support group. We don't know why exactly. And then we see that his friends obviously just like they all think he's horrible, and they don't really want to have anything to do with him, but then they kind of come back to it because they think something is wrong. And you can tell that everybody there is uncomfortable. And that's a very dramatic discomfort.
True. Paul?
Yeah, Julia anticipated what I was going to say. I don't think this is so much of a comedy as it's a drama with comedic elements. And what, as Julia said, what really brings this home is we find out why eventually he was in that support group and why he's been such an a-hole. And it's the suicide attempt. I mean, it's very subtle. I mean, you just see the bandages. It's not to say I try, but it's enough to go like, oh. And that's why I was able to reframe the beginning of the movie a little better after realizing, okay, this is where he's come from. It's not that he was it's a AA meeting just for drugs. It's because he tried to kill himself.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense now. It helped reframe that first half of the movie. And this is not really so much a comedy as it's a comedic drama.
Fair point. David, you want to jump in on this?
I guess I'd still call it a comedy, but with all of the darkness and the weight that's just been described. And this is true of all three of their films, right? There is real pain in them. When Shaun's mother dies, that's a hard scene in Shaun of the Dead. I think what makes these comedies ones that are worth revisiting, as opposed to ones where you laugh the first time but then you don't need to hear the joke again, whereas these films give you something to go back to again and again and again, is the weight of the characters, the looniness that comes out of the characters and out of their situations. They're all very nicely integrated. They're not tacked on, but we care about these people, which is really important. So when they do hurt, we do feel that pain, or at least certainly in the case of the central characters.
Yeah, and there's a sense at which, like in a lot of comedies, you don't really have characters, you have caricatures. Whereas here, they're individuals, they have their own personalities, their own kind of lives. I haven't seen Hot Fuzz in a long time, so I can't speak to that. But it's certainly true with Shaun of the Dead and the World's End. They're very much real individuals, or at least feel that, at least with the main cast. And so they have their own trials and tribulations. And I love the way in which, at least in World's End, that all of his friends have their own kind of like little thing or quirk from the past that they haven't been able to let go of. So I think it's Pete who has the bully problem, and when the bully actually comes up, the bully's a robot, so the bully doesn't recognize him, and he has this really kind of interesting moment where he says, like, it's not all of the painful things he did to me as a kid that matters, it's that he didn't recognize me, after all of these years, after all of the horrible things he did, he didn't even recognize they exist. And this goes to one of the things Paul was saying earlier, that the system actually adjusts, and then suddenly the bully remembers, and then in this humorous moment, he kills the bully.
Yep.
But all of the characters have that. They all have their at least one thing that they still are kind of stuck on about the past. And that gets hashed out in some way in the film. So it's like what you were saying, David, it's a film that isn't, it's not just a bunch of jokes. It's a narrative that happens to have funny things surrounding it. Or I guess what Julia and Paul would say is, you say it's a funny movie with interesting things going on underneath. I don't know. Yeah. Sorry, we've been hashing out for a bit. Do we feel like we covered everything?
Yeah, I think we can wrap this up.
Awesome. All right, let's grade it. So, Julia, what grade would you give it?
I'm going to give it an A-, and the minus is solely because of the women.
Fair enough. Paul?
I like that analysis, Julia. A-.
Yeah. David?
Thirding that, A-.
And I'm going to be giving it the same grade, A-. So, awesome. So if anybody listening to this would like to give their thoughts about the movie, assuming you've already seen it and we didn't just ruin the whole freaking thing for you, go ahead and there's information at the end. So thanks, Julia, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I would say that even if you think that we ruined it for you, you could watch this movie knowing what happened and it would still be great.
I agree, because we didn't describe all of the funny bits, and we didn't describe every sort of dramatic moment. There's a lot there. So
aside from that, it stands up. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. It's one of those movies that will stand up to a rewatch even when you do know everything.
That's a fair point. I'd agree with that. Cool. Well,
I really need to see it again after this.
Awesome.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I need to see it again.
Fair enough. So thank you to Paul for coming on and going to see the movie and everything.
Oh, absolutely. This was fun.
Yeah, and thank you too, David.
Thank you.
Perfect. All right, we'll see everybody next time. Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction!
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.